For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. This podcast is recorded and produced on the lands of the Djabal and Djerriwarr peoples. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, their elders past, present and emerging. On the 7th of November, the MJA published a supplement on the management of mild to moderate COVID-19 in Australia, consisting of three chapters. One of those chapters is on the management of COVID in the community and the role of primary care. It's written by Sarah Larkins, Professor of Health System Strengthening at James Cook University in Townsville, Dr. Nicole Allard, a GP and the COVID clinical lead at CoHealth in Melbourne, and Associate Professor Paul Burgess, who is Acting Director of Population and Digital Health at NT Health in Darwin. Today, Sarah and Nicole join me to talk about what can be learned from COVID-19 to better prepare primary care for the next pandemic. This article you guys have written is part of a supplement that's going on the MJA on Monday about the management of COVID-19, particularly mild and moderate COVID-19. And you have talked about management in primary care. How is primary care dealing with the situation we have at the moment?
I mean, COVID has now become an endemic virus in Australia. And so general practice is doing most of the heavy lifting when it comes around to caring for people with COVID. General practice has adapted really rapidly during the pandemic, including taking on telehealth, which is obviously very useful in the setting of looking after people with COVID. And I think backed up by some initiatives, including general practice respiratory clinics, so alternative places for people to go who are unwell. I think we're now sitting in a situation where most people are pretty familiar with COVID and what needs to be done.
It has been a bit of a race getting to that point, and there's been a bit of variability in areas where there's been a relatively higher incidence of cases and GPs have become more exposed to it, that perhaps the systems are stronger than in some of the rural and remote areas where there's a lot of turnover, different systems, and perhaps we're still not quite so good at managing it.
You're up in regional Queensland. How do you think your situation up there has differed from, say, Nicole's situation in Melbourne?
We've had less volume of, you know, in terms of experience, caseload and so on all the way through. Again, I think there's a big difference between regional centres such as Townsville, where I am, and out bush in the Northern Territory and remote areas of Queensland, where there are still systematised responses, but patchy outbreaks that are somewhat challenging.
So let's talk about the good news first. What have we learned that's been good from the way we've managed COVID, and what's been really strengthened by the pandemic?
I think we've learned the place of strong public health measures and trust in a health system to prevent a larger scale loss of life and to allow our population to be vaccinated prior to being exposed to what in the end was a milder variant, which was a welcome event that it became milder as we went along. For example, if we'd had Delta take off in a similar way that Omicron had took off, we would be in a very different situation with many more Australians having lost their lives. So I think in that way, there has been big successes. And I think general practice along the way has been key to that. They've had to communicate various decisions of government to patients around vaccination, eligibility for vaccination, treatments, eligibility for treatments, and also public health messages, which did cause distress and psychological issues among many people across our country.
Is telehealth one of those positives?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we've also learned, in addition to the things Nicole mentioned, I think we've also learned about the importance of regional planning that involves both primary care providers, general practice, community control sector, other primary care providers, and the hospital sector in responding to care in whatever form it's needed. And that reinforces the importance of the National Health Reform Agreement for trying to bring together all providers in regional planning agreements.
Let's go back to pre-pandemic. What was the state of planning for a future pandemic, and what role did primary care play in those plans?
Limited, I think, is the one word answer. So, and there's been a Senate inquiry on this topic, and really it's underscored the limited planning that has gone on in the past. And certainly that the planning that did go on involved public health and acute care sector, and really totally neglected involving the primary care sector in that.
Was that your experience in the big city too, Nicole?
When we entered the first major wave in 2020 in Victoria, general practice, certainly there was more a message around how to avoid COVID. And at that stage, to be fair, we thought it was going to be a shorter time period. We didn't really know that we were in for quite so many years of experience. But it was about trying to kind of avoid it. And I don't think we were really involving general practice, even though they were involved, by being on the front line and seeing people and having to rearrange appointments and the way we practiced. I don't think people were really involved. Now, I think what happened in the northwest of Melbourne, and that's mentioned in our article, is that there was actually a wonderful partnership between acute and services and primary care, which included general practitioners across the northwest and CoHealth, which is a big community health organisation. And we actually, right from the get-go, from the very large outbreak that took place in the public housing towers, we recognised that actually involvement of general practice was crucial from the beginning.
Who initiated that? Was it the GPs? Was it the hospitals?
No, it was really co-designed with the PHN very closely involved, with the hospital initially, Royal Melbourne Hospital, and also CoHealth, but then also working with partnerships in general practice. And over that time, and no system was perfect, but we had over 2,000 GPs participating, looking after people with COVID. We had direct referral in to hospital in the home and better care within the hospital sector. And again, it's so hard, but you've got to take your mind back. 10% of people were ending up in hospital. We were regularly calling ambulances for relatively young people who were quite short of breath. This is quite prior to vaccination. And what we found was that there was incredible interest among the general practice population. We had multiple attendances at education sessions run by the PHN. The hospital were amazingly responsive. It was quite easy to ring and talk to someone. And it was about trying to coordinate that best for a population in an area. And I think that local response was really important.
That seems to have been really key, because what I'm hearing from the GPs I work with regularly is that they sort of had to do that at the local level themselves, because the communication from the governments at whatever levels was poor when it came to primary care. Is that been your experience, Sarah?
I think in terms of the pre-planning and the very early stage response, that was certainly the case. And you know, there was an expectation that primary health networks would do that. There wasn't always the support from in terms of distribution networks for things like vaccines and PPE and rat tests from federal agencies to support that activity. And so people were trying to link together and form whatever networks they could to share information and do whatever planning they could.
When the health minister says, we're throwing it to the GPs now, they're going to care for people in the community, did they back that up with, you know, a truckload of PPE and a truckload of rats and a truckload of oxygen measures, things like that? Or was it just, thanks, see ya?
I think it was very different in different jurisdictions.
Right.
And I think this brings us back to one of the issues of our public health system, is that we have a national bodies of CDNA and so forth, and each jurisdiction is run by the state health department, and the responses and the resources might be different, and how they planned might also be different. So it isn't a uniform response, and it wouldn't have been a uniform experience for any general practitioner or any individual. And I guess it's about thinking about what are the better learnings from this pandemic, and how could we future-proof the public health system? And I really think integration and true consideration of general practice, its power, its reach, and the need to have it right up front and centre in the public health response, because this doesn't just happen in infectious diseases wards. This is going to happen in general practice. We are going to be the first ones to experience a new pandemic if we do have to in our lifetime. It is really important that we think about it again.
It's absolutely central in training to be a general practitioner and primary rural generalist practitioners in rural and remote areas also, you know, to be that coordinator of care for people in the community and link up the different parts of the system. So makes absolute sense to involve GPs and primary care providers in as part of the solution, because they're well placed and used to being that sort of linchpin between community and hospital.
I'm chatting today with Sarah Larkins, Professor of Health System Strengthening at James Cook University, and Dr. Nicole Allard, COVID Clinical Lead at CoHealth in Melbourne. The link to their contribution to the MJA supplement and the link to the supplement itself can be found in the show notes to this podcast, along with a link to the work of the Primary and Chronic Care Panel of the National Clinical Evidence Task Force. If you're enjoying this podcast, catch up with all our episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts, where you will find them all freely available. You can also sign up to our future episodes by searching for Medical Journal of Australia on your favourite podcast platform and hitting the subscribe button. Back to our chat. Of course, we're talking in a week or a fortnight in which doctors in general and GPs in particular have been under a lot of attacks about the so-called Medicare rorts and some other things too. Do you feel like that value is understood by the people who are going to be doing the planning in the future?
I think so. I think the particular conversation around rorting in Medicare, there is a small part of our profession who probably need to be accountable for those.
Yes.
But I think the majority of the profession has worked incredibly hard for the last couple of years and has worked within the bounds of Medicare.
You know, the undervaluing of care provided in general practice through the Medicare system is one of the real limitations in terms of the breadth of responses that GPs were able to mount during COVID and beyond. So, you know, it's a historical undervaluing. I think it's much better recognised in the current policy settings, and I'm hoping that there'll be a little bit of action on that, but we've still got a way to go.
So we're in a federated system, and we all know the problems that throws up in terms of cross-jurisdictional communication and planning. There's been a lot of talk about a federal or a national CDC. Is that a way to go? Do you think that will solve or help solve these pandemic planning problems?
Look, I think it has potential to have power, but I think right at the beginning, we need to advocate in general practice for our CDC, not just to address communicable diseases, to address communicable and non-communicable diseases. And I think we also need to advocate for it to be strongly primary care focused in its development rather than a sort of top-down acute to primary care structure. That would be lovely, and that would be also really, it has to be part of the strategy because it is important. Like if we're looking at, for example, mosquito-borne outbreaks, not a communicable disease in the Murray or the flood areas of Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, we're going to see that first in general practice. General practice are going to be the first people to notice these kind of patterns and in their communities. And I think what we need to do is look at our public health system and look at their communication with general practice, whether it's federated or whether it's national, and try and improve those links to make sure that we can have a more robust system.
And I think that it's really important that we have a federated system that also recognises different issues in rural and remote areas, but also combine that, a national body perhaps of some nature, but combine that with nodes of regional, like a regional planning that again bring the local players together. And it's those two levels that are needed to be operating in parallel, I think, for a really streamlined and integrated response.
In your article, you conclude by talking about three priorities that you think need to be top of mind. Let's talk a bit about those. The first one is the co-design of regional models of care. Sarah, where's the importance of that? And you were just talking about that. Is it true that local is where it gets done?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have these problems with lack of integration in our health system and the place at the moment that solutions to that are made are through people that know each other, primary care and hospital systems getting together and saying, how can we do this better for this region with the available resources that we have? It's not particularly supported within our planning and funding systems at the moment. It requires those relationships to make it happen. But I think incentivising that sort of behaviour, involving consumers very much in the care, getting clinicians at all levels and of all flavours working together to come up with models of care that will actually be primary care centred, so start with the care of people in communities, but have appropriate pathways for triaging, referral, escalation of care when that's required. And apply no matter where you live. And thinking about the role of digital technology, telehealth and so on as part of that solution, not replacing face-to-face care, but as a supplement to it.
Yeah.
And thinking really importantly about the workforce and how we distribute that. That's really the really critical parts of health system reform, certainly in rural, regional or remote parts of the country. And I think it's a good way to go in the cities as well, as demonstrated by the co-health model.
The second priority you talk about is maintaining access for vulnerable populations when things are really tough. How do you do that when resources are tight and when perhaps the situation is pretty dire?
Well, I think we saw actually a lot of willingness to think about that during the pandemic. And it was kind of like once we're in a crisis, there was solutions were suddenly found. So, for example, people who weren't Medicare eligible were eligible for vaccination. People who weren't Medicare eligible were eligible for care in communities. There was a system. It wasn't perfect. It there were still some gaps. I think we've got, you know, we've got our mainstream services, whether it be general practice, acute care, but we've always got to continue to fund other services that specifically address problems of people in need. So whether that be homeless services, we need to always encourage community control, community medicine where things aren't working. And there's been talk of doing that in rural settings as well, where there's been a failure in the private market to provide private general practice. Could we look at more of a community health model in those settings? So, you know, we've got mainstream general practice, we've got mainstream primary care, but we've got a lot of other models and we've got to think about those loco-regional solutions. We talked quite a lot in Victoria about standardisation of COVID care, and I always was promoting that it's about minimum standards, but then allowing innovation in a local area.
Yeah,
so let's not keep everyone within the same standard. Let's allow people and fund people to innovate within their area.
The third pillar you mentioned is a fit for purpose workforce. Where do we need to fill the gaps there? Is this about education of students? Is it about education of GPs? Is it patient education? What are we looking at?
This is absolutely critical. In Australia, for example, we're right up the top of the league tables in terms of OECD figures for doctors per population, but have them doing the right things in the right places for the right people. So we've got a real distribution problem in terms of both discipline, so not enough primary care general practitioners, and also in terms of geographic location. So it's really important that we train doctors, train medical students, so they're going to have a desire and the appropriate aptitudes and skills to work in the areas where they're most needed to want to go into primary care. So not knock that idealism and desire to work with communities in a really continuing way out of them through prioritising hospital quality care. You know, that too often happens. But there are also some really important elements in terms of other parts of the health workforce and up in Northern Australia, growing the First Nations health workforce in nursing, allied health, but also Aboriginal health workers, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health workers and practitioners, and ensuring they have good clinical pathways and training options. It's about the education and training. It's about the role modelling. It's about the support for people when they are in those posts and making sure they're well supported, well networked. The role in the system is really well understood.
Both of you, are you optimistic about what happens the next time we have a shock like this?
I maybe probably have to get over this pandemic before I can contemplate this one. I think the other thing I would really, really like to see in terms of workforce is the role of community health workers. So we see an Aboriginal health workforce that is so valuable in delivering culturally appropriate care to communities. We should extend that to our multicultural Australia and try and make sure that we have another workforce to activate within our public health system response. Again, there were initiatives in various jurisdictions, including a program in Victoria, but that delivery of information to community by community is really important. We need to think of how we how we triage our workforce, you know, so everyone works at top of scope mm-hmm. when we're under pressure, but that we also have enough workforce. And I think we can learn a lot. And hopefully, if there is an Australian CDC in the future, hopefully it considers these kind of responses, because they're also really good for non-communicable diseases. It's also proven to make a difference.
And there was good evidence about the role of the Aboriginal health workers from the NT that we talked about in our paper in terms of the difference in vaccination rates when Aboriginal health workers were involved compared to if they weren't. So, you know, I would expect that to be transferable with community health workers in other sort of urban multicultural communities.
Had a change of government since the worst of the pandemic. Are you noticing any difference, any change in style, communication, resources?
I mean, I think we're actually into a period where resources are being withdrawn from the COVID response as it becomes part of a business as usual model. And I think if we continue to say it is just business as usual, we will lose equity in our response. I think we need to acknowledge that. And hopefully we need to have this more integrated across other infectious diseases, but there is still a lot of work to be done.
I think we have had lots of learning in primary care, and I really hope that our experiences during the COVID pandemic can be used to stimulate much needed healthcare reform into the future. I think building a more integrated healthcare system where primary care and hospital care are better integrated and public health system responses.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.